Welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
I'm Alex, and we are back with the dark truth of Fukushima, the everlasting nuclear disaster in Japan. This is the program I didn't want to make, but this world-scale accident is still just beginning. Not that you'd know that from the mainstream media. Before we get back into that news and what Japanese TV is saying, I want to pick up from the first half hour the idea that if leaders don't tell the public the truth about radiation danger, they may be one day held accountable. If there is a mass cancer in Japan within 25 years, I suspect the remaining decision makers, the men who did not evacuate population living in radioactive zones, they could be hunted down like the Nazi war criminals were. Those are harsh words, I know, and these people, in their minds, they are trying to do the best they can. But what can we say about officials who encourage children to return to school, even in the 20 to 30 kilometer zone around Fukushima, who let them live where even the sewage is radioactive, where each night's wind brings the unseen radiation into their lungs and their lives? Here's NHK World News.
The mayor of Fukushima City has a great demand from parents and teachers to have radiation-contaminated topsoil removed from schoolyards. Outdoor radiation levels temporarily exceeded safety limits last month at 10 kindergartens, nurseries, and elementary and junior high schools in the city. The Municipal Board of Education says most elementary schools continue to have students play and study indoors. On Tuesday, members of the Federation of Local Parent Teacher Associations met with Mayor Takanori Seto. The PTAs requested that surface soil be removed from schoolyards to prevent children's exposure to radiation. They also demanded a briefing for concerned parents by municipal officials and radiation experts. Mayor Seto said the city will start removing soil from the schoolyards as soon as it decides on the most effective method.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with more news from the developing nuclear disaster at Fukushima, Japan. We just heard Japanese TV reporting this about an official pronouncement.
The situation at the power plant is stabilizing.
Here is what the Japanese-American nuclear physicist Michio Kaku said about this stabilizing nuclear plant on Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman.
So when the utility says that things are stable, it's only stable in the sense that you're dangling from a cliff, hanging by your fingernails, and as the time goes by, each fingernail starts to crack. That's the situation now.
Now let's get an update on how things are going, how the utility TEPCO and the government are bringing these reactors under control. Let's tune in to reactor number one at Fukushima Daiichi, Japan. On the 27th of April, Bloomberg News reported radiation levels at reactor one rose to the highest levels measured since the March 11th quake. A pair of robots measured an astounding 1,120 millisieverts per hour of radiation. If I calculate correctly, that's about 112,000 millirems per hour in American measurements. Then it got worse. The temperature inside this first reactor kept rising, and there is only one reason why. Supposedly, the atomic reaction was stopped when the control rods were automatically dropped into the reactor at the time of the quake. But when the electricity powering the cooling pumps failed, at least half the fuel rods melted down, as TEPCO admits. There was a big hydrogen explosion which severely damaged the outer concrete building. In a rush to replace cooling water, TEPCO pumped in thousands of tons of salty seawater for a couple of weeks until urged to use fresh water barged in by the Americans. Tons of salt built up in the reactor itself, we think. Who knows what it's blocking? And stainless steel piping in the plant would start rapid corrosion. David Lochbaum of the Union of Concerned Scientists suggested water was not even reaching the fuel rods, a theory accepted weeks later by TEPCO. This past week, the utility sent the first humans to any of the reactors into Reactor 1. They set up long tubes and pumps trying to remove radioactive air from the inner building. The highly radioactive air in the building was blown out through the upper vents into the atmosphere. This was done at night, hopefully with the wind blowing the radiation out into the Pacific. Heaven help those creatures there. But nothing in air moves just one way. I'm sure some of it would have reached the land as well. According to Xinhua China News and other sources, just by opening the doors to reactor number one, the workers blew another 500 million becquerels of radioactive materials into the atmosphere. It was an extravaganza of radioactive pollution that hardly anyone has heard about, and it didn't work. Since then, Japanese NHK World reports on May 10th.
Elevated radiation levels are again hampering the work to bring the troubled Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant under control. Tokyo Electric Power Company says it may need to slow down work at the number one reactor, raising concerns that the overall plans to repair the plant will be reviewed. The company measured radiation levels at several spots in the reactor building on Monday as part of its preparation to fill the containment vessel with water and restore a circulating cooling system. The company is concerned that the reactor's pipes are leaking radioactive water, contaminating the area. The test yielded a maximum of 700 millisieverts per hour, which would only allow workers to stay in the vicinity for around 20 minutes. However, employees spent half an hour doing the tests and were exposed to as much as 10.56 millisieverts of radiation. TEPCO says the figures are higher than acceptable for worker safety.
We hope that radiation levels would go down to 1 millisievert per hour, but things didn't work out that way. We need to bring in some shielding system or clear out the highly contaminated rubble.
On Tuesday, the firm will attempt measures to reduce radiation levels, including laying down sheets containing lead to insulate the radioactive substances. It will continue checking the levels, but is worried that it may need to change plans depending on the results.
Since the company can't seem to get water directly into the reactor, TEPCO's plan remains flooding the containment building of Reactor 1 around it, a risky experiment never tried in nuclear operation history. It was never designed for. There is a danger the extra weight of all that water in a damaged building, or with a further earthquake, could wreck the inner reactor, exposing it to the air. Nobody knows. Last week, the company temporarily gave up this effort as the pressure inside Reactor 1 dropped towards zero, which could draw in outside oxygen, fueling another dangerous hydrogen explosion. Water pumping was lowered from 20 tons a day to just 6 tons a day. Workers have gone back in lately to install some gauges, even though lead shielding mats only reduced high radiation inside by a meager 10%. We'll talk about those workers soon. Are they expendable?
This is EcoShock Radio. All environment, all the time. Get more info on the web at ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, dragged back into the ongoing nuclear accident in Japan. Okay, let's go to Reactor 2. Reactor 2 is probably the most seriously damaged. It has a hole in it. Lava-like nuclear fuel is pooled in the bottom, possibly leaking out into the lower apparatus or building basement. Certainly, highly radioactive water, tons and tons more of it every day, is passing directly through the melted fuel into various catchments, the basements and trenches, and the subsoil. TEPCO is trying to catch some of it for storage or treatment later. Reactor 2 is also smoking, releasing radioactive steam each and every day. It is a nuclear accident out of control. And yet that seems almost better than the monster next door, Reactor 3. NHK World typically understates the situation this way.
The utility also says the temperature of the plant's number 3 reactor has been rising this month, and that its efforts to cool the reactor by pumping water into it may not be sufficient. TEPCO says it is installing new pipes to the reactor in hopes to start pumping water through them on Thursday.
It may be insufficient because the temperature inside Reactor 3 keeps rising and rising. At one point, it was measured above 300 degrees centigrade, at least 572 degrees Fahrenheit, higher than the operating temperature of a live reactor. There are a lot of different reports out there about this. The media tends to chime in if temperatures drop, but not when they go high. One report from Mainichi News Japan puts Reactor 3 at 217 degrees C on May 8th. NHK World tells us the cooler temperature measured down at the bottom of the reactor at 150.6 degrees C on May 10th, right there in Japan. Let's listen to this report from NHK World on May the 10th.
The operator of the troubled Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant is to begin construction work on pipes for the number 3 reactor to make sure that all cooling water being pumped in is actually reaching the reactor. Tokyo Electric Power Company has been pumping 9 tons of water per hour into the reactor since Wednesday after its temperature began rising earlier this month. The flow was boosted from 7 tons per hour, but the temperature at the bottom of the reactor stood at 150.6 degrees Celsius as of 5 a.m. Tuesday, marking a rise of 34.1 degrees over the past 10 days. The power company suspects that not all the water was reaching the reactor because some of it may have entered pipes that branched off. The utility then decided to pump the water through another pipe, which is directly connected to the reactor. The work to change pipes will begin on Tuesday afternoon. If successful, pumping through the directly connected pipe will commence on Thursday.
Again, the print version online for that broadcast, which is obviously not a transcript of what really is said on television, it adds, the water level inside a tunnel connected to the reactor was 76 centimeters from the tunnel opening on the ground surface as of 7 a.m. Tuesday, a 16-centimeter rise over the past 10 days. The level continues to exceed the 1-meter mark, which the utility has set as the benchmark to begin transferring contaminated water. The firm plans to quickly prepare to transfer contaminated water from the number 3 reactor turbine building and the tunnel. So it's starting to flood, and they don't mention that on the television. The top story of the 4-story reactor 3 building is missing entirely, blown away by the hydrogen explosion in mid-March. And the third story is just a bunch of wreckage you can see right through. In high-resolution photos, the spent fuel pond, loaded with highly radioactive fuel rods, appears partly blown away somewhere. Until May 10th, TEPCO appeared to say nothing about the condition of this spent fuel pond at Reactor 3. Apparently, docile Japanese reporters did not ask about it, even though this is the most likely source of the fuel rods found outside in the grounds of the plant and even a mile beyond the plant boundaries. Finally, again on May 10th, when TEPCO seems to have divulged a flurry of overdue news, the company reported something about the Reactor 3 pool. They showed a video of water covering an area where the fuel rods used to be amid extreme damage amounting to piles of rubble over and in the fuel pond. Only a small part of the fuel pond is shown, presumably the part that is still there, but it is containing water, it seems. So we just don't know the true state of this facility. I wish we could get accurate reports from TEPCO and from the government. Let's listen to this carefully manicured projection by NHK World.
Tokyo Electric Power Company has detected high levels of radioactive materials in the spent fuel pool of the number 3 reactor at the Fukushima Daiichi. TEPCO examined the water sample from the pool on Sunday. It contained 140,000 becquerels of radioactive cesium-134 per cubic centimeter, 150,000 becquerels of cesium-137, and 11,000 becquerels of iodine-131. The radioactive iodine is leading TEPCO to believe these substances may have come from damaged fuel rods in the reactor rather than the damaged spent fuel rods in the pool. Iodine-131 is generated during nuclear fission inside a reactor. The substance has a short half-life. The utility says the radioactive substances may have become attached to debris and enter the spent fuel pool together. None of these substances was detected during an inspection on March 2nd before the accident triggered by the March 11th disaster.
Again, TEPCO denies anything bad happened to the fuel rods themselves, despite the horrendous explosion and missing parts of the building. The extra radiation is supposed to come from radioactive debris falling in, or, ominously, from damaged fuel rods in the reactor. How does radiation from the reactor get into the spent fuel pool? Is the reactor containment so damaged? Stop asking such obvious questions. These are the ones never answered in the mysterious press releases from TEPCO, the government, or any of the Japanese agencies. Maybe they don't know. Certainly, they don't say. We've already talked about the risk of the Reactor 4 falling over. You can watch the polluted steam or smoke always coming from that building. Authorities admit continuous flooding of the basements, trenches, and we presume the groundwater from that reactor. Seldom mentioned, Reactors 5 and 6 are also flooding with water, also becoming unstable in the soaked radioactive ground and foundations. This is a collection of disasters. They don't happen fast enough to catch our attention, except for the occasional spectacular leak, fire, or explosion. Now we don't bother reporting even that. 500 million becquerels of radiation escapes when we open the doors. Ha! That was nothing, some authority says. Nothing. Just 1/300th of all the radioactive poison we dumped into the sea one day last month. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, and I'm angry my world has been polluted. Just a light-up neon sign somewhere. I'm angry my own government is doing the very same thing, running the same risk of closing off big parts of the countryside and even major cities to fill any wasteful demand for electricity at all. I'm sad for all the displaced people in Japan, from the tsunami that has almost disappeared from the news. They are almost helpless. Now all that is left is entire towns full of rubble and some bodies still not found. I understand that the leaders of Japan and Tokyo Electric Power are just humans. They could give up, but they will not. As I said at the start of this program, I applaud the announcements by Prime Minister Kan to close down the dangerous Hamaoka nuclear plant, to stop the construction of 14 planned new reactors, and to search for the truly safe, clean, sustainable energy that Japan needs. But this bold search for the new Japan calls on the people to admit one more shame, the dirty secret of how that country's nuclear industry has used the most defenseless people to clean up their mess. Those workers are expected to go away and die as unreported casualties of radiation sickness and deadly cancer. Japan has a history of using outcasts for the most menial work. Over long feudal time, they created a lower caste for such jobs. This continued into modern times, and some untrained, almost uneducated, casual workers have been employed to clean up nuclear accidents, reportedly with just buckets and towels, with no protective equipment. You can find evidence in the film Nuclear Ginza, produced in 1995 for the UK television channel 4. The film starts in Japanese with English subtitles, then weaves in English language narration. You hear the stories of the people, see the images of low-class or homeless workers used by the nuclear industry time and again for very little pay. In some cases, nobody explained the risk, nobody kept track of their dose, and they ignored obvious signs of radiation poisoning. If a lawsuit arose, the victim was paid off, the film says.
I am Kenji Higuchi. I stumbled upon these stories as a young photographer 20 years ago. It changed my life. The scenes I saw, the stories I heard, I found them difficult to believe at first. That workers go near their reactor and get exposed, and that many of them become ill with radiation sickness and sometimes die. Or that these people are farmers and fishermen or even laborers picked off the streets in the slums of Osaka and Tokyo. But when I started looking, I found so many of these people, people who didn't know what had happened to them, or if they did, too frightened to speak out. The thing that struck me was that all their stories were the same. During these years, I have scratched below the surface and have discovered the underside of Japan, a side the world knows nothing about. People simply don't believe this can happen in a country like Japan, a country where the companies are famous for treating workers so well. 3 hours train ride from here lies the nuclear Ginza. 15 reactors lined up one after the other along the Japan Sea coast. Among them, the world's first fast breeder reactor built last year.
Blogger Sarah Norbach writes on April 1, 2011, quote, back in 1995, the UK's Channel 4 produced a 30-minute documentary on Japan's nuclear industry and how they use disadvantaged people, including Bakurim and other day laborers, to do manual labor inside their power plants. And by inside, I mean inside. Some were forced to work right next to the room where the core was kept, in the dark and drenched in sweat. One man tells how he was forced to mop up radioactive water with towels. End quote. See that complete half-hour documentary at japansubculture.com or find the link in my blog at ecoshock.info.
The spiral of discrimination is never-ending. Murai is ostracized from his community because of his illness. Exactly the same has happened to survivors of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombs. It is terrible that the only country on which the nuclear bomb was dropped has produced the same suffering from its own nuclear power stations. This is the kind of country we live in. I cannot accept it.
In the very popular financial blog called The Automatic Earth, one writer is called Stoneleigh, and in her career as Nicole Foss. Nicole was a relatively recent guest on Radio EcoShock. She has a degree and experience in evaluating nuclear accidents. In Stoneleigh's recent moving and poignant post at The Automatic Earth, she explores the reported horrible conditions for workers at the Fukushima plant during this accident, in the context of long-term abuse of nuclear workers in dangerous situations in Japan. You must read her May 10th post, Welcome to the Atomic Village, at theautomaticearth.blogspot.com, theautomaticearth.blogspot.com. Find that link in my blog, too. Stoneleigh explains the history of lower castes in Japan, from the Burakumin to the Yoshiba. There are many links in this article, including to another blog titled Dying for TEPCO, Fukushima's Nuclear Contract Workers by Paul Jobin at JapanFocus.org. Great article. How these use them and lose them workers are attracted by false advertisements or hustled up by Yakuza, according to the program Nuclear Ginza, by the gangsters. They face these workers incredible risks and are afterwards shunned, as today's Fukushima nuclear workers will be in Japan. Have you wondered how more than 1,000 TEPCO workers, some of them walked through radioactive water, wandered near record-high radiation outside the plants, slept there, ran through tunnels of irradiated water, while the utility claims there is not a single serious radiation injury, that nobody has suffered radiation poisoning or even gone over the recently raised acceptable levels? Here is Stoneleigh's conclusion, and I quote, "It may be very difficult to undertake any future epidemiological study of the health effects of Fukushima liquidators as it was at Chernobyl, where little data was ever collected. You get the picture. We may never know what happened to these workers. Years later, as they sicken and die, we will hear the truth, perhaps, about the workers now at Fukushima, or maybe they will die in back alleys with no records to show. I say all this in full consciousness that here in North America we have our own outcasts who we use and abuse. In Canada, the First Nations Aboriginal people are beaten, poisoned on their own reserves, used as women, jailed and killed. In America, the jails are full of African Americans run through the so-called justice system by the millions. Just like Japan, our so-called nuclear regulators are often bribed or paid by the nuclear industry, and they use the revolving door to get big-paying jobs when they leave, as 68 Japanese nuclear regulators did. The same thing happens with the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. It's all a big boys' club, which is paid for by the industry, incidentally, and never turns down a license application. We have the same failed system. Japan has showed us the extreme consequences when nuclear things go wrong. Nobody here is without sin, but in the atomic world, there is no margin for errors like these. The atom is unforgiving, spreading the cancer to everyone in the world from any accident or terrorist act anywhere. We are not any of us perfect enough to use this technology. We see that now. In this time of extreme challenge, we need to help the Japanese people, and even that government which we criticize, acknowledging our own abuse of atomic knowledge, our own history of violence and secrecy, we plead with Japan to take that step above. Save your own children by evacuating them from anywhere near that big radiation zone. Spare the future of the nation. Protect the heroes who risk their lives trying to stop the next worst stage of this nuclear disaster. Treat them like heroes. And yes, go for clean energy. We all need to do it. You can lead us. And try even harder to tell your people and the people of the world the truth. The whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I'm Alex Smith, and this has been Radio EcoShock. My thanks to all the listeners who sent in tips and links, and to the bloggers at the edge, trying to keep the players honest. And thanks to California musician Vastman. Find him on SoundClick.com for his occasional music, including Raining Radiation. Please tune in next week. If nothing blows up in Japan, we'll look at the problems right in our own streets, the developing energy prices that will change everything you take for granted. Starvation by Oil next week, I hope, on Radio EcoShock. Our website is ecoshock.org. Find the blog for this program at ecoshock.info. Thanks for listening. After all that heavy stuff, I want to go out with the inspiration to change with the power of the feeling for our own land. So here's a song by Rachel Van Zanten. It's called My Country.
Hey there, mister, take a good look at my country. It's a natural bona fide high. From the numbers on your paper, you might see Yaki Star pass you by. You might see it all pass you by. I cannot let this pass me by.